सह वीर्यं करवाहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। श्रीभगवानुवाच काम एष क्रोध एषः रजो गुणसमुद्भवः महाशनो महापाप्मा विद्येनमिह वैरिणम्। So in reply to Arjuna's question as to what it is that makes a person helpless to go against his own nature, atha kena prayuktoyam papam charati purushah, Arjuna asked a very practical question of Lord Krishna. How come this person performs a sin against his own wish? Anichchanna vivarshanaya baladiva niyojitah, as though he is compelled to do so by someone against his own wish, what is it that makes this person commit a sin, go against his own values? So Arjuna recognized that it seems there is something within me which seems to compel me to violate my own values, even though I have certain values in my life, even though there are things that I like to do, things that I want to avoid. And thus I have a set of values and I want to follow them, and still there seems to be something within me that compels me to go against my own, even though I see. I know that I do not want to hurt somebody, I know that I do not want to cheat somebody, I do not want to indulge into anything, and still I find myself doing those things. What is it that makes me do that? And Lord replied, kama eshaha, krodha eshaha. Here Arjuna, it is kama, the desire. Krodha eshaha, the desire that gets transformed into krodha or the anger. So kama gets transformed into krodha. It is that which is what compels a human being in fact to do what that he does. As we have been discussing in last two classes, that whenever a person violates a value, it is out of helplessness, never out of choice. If I had my choice, then I would never want to violate the values, I would never want to hurt anybody, I would never want to cheat anybody, I would never want to lie, I would not want to be dishonest, I would not want that, because that is not where my heart is. Nobody's heart is in this evil values or evil behavior, but then there is something within me, as we said, born of ignorance. And thus we find that within ourselves there are these two concurrent streams of tendencies. There is one stream of tendency which is all goodness. At the same time, unfortunately, there is also a stream of tendencies in ourselves which is evil tendencies. Thus these two contradictory tendencies are there within the same heart. And sometimes my heart is overtaken by the negative tendencies, then I seem to act like I am an evil, I am a devil. Sometimes I am, on the other hand, under the spell of the good tendency, and I act as though I am God. Swami, you don't know this person. Sometimes he is, you know, he is like God. And sometimes you have to see him. So we think that he is being God, or that means he is being a good person, he is all show, Swamiji is all, you know, this is nothing but show. He is just pretending to be. Really he is this. Really the fellow is evil. But he is pretending to be good. You would say the other way around, he is good, he is unfortunate, not pretending. Unfortunately, he comes under the sway of some impulses, and therefore he acts as though he is evil. So this is very important to remember for others as well as for our own selves, that, as we said, inherently each one of us is good. In fact, each one of us is inherently good, divine, and God, not only good. That's what we are. And whatever we find opposite to that, any kind of negative or evil tendencies we find in ourselves, all of these are only incidental, all of these are intruders, all of these are only products of ignorance, they are not our inherent nature. And that's the reason why we can give them up, we can grow out of them. And that's the purpose of the discussion. The reason why Arjuna asks this question is, what is the nature of that which compels me to act against my nature? I want to know that, so I can become free from that. Only when the cause goes, then the effect will go. So our behavior can change provided the forces which compel our behavior, they also change. And then Arjuna wants to know, who is that? What is that? Kama esha, krodha esha. Lord Krishna said that it is that craving within oneself. It is that tendency to indulge. So by the krama, we'll hear me, not just the desire, but then the tendency to indulge. Even when my desire is there, as long as I remain within my bounds of the values, so long it's okay. Fulfilling my desire within the boundaries of values is okay. It's not damaging. It's not the best. Ultimately, we would want that a person becomes free from desire because it is a product of ignorance. But even then, as long as desires are fulfilled within the bounds of the values, as long as we do not compromise the means for the sake of the end, so long it's okay. But unfortunately, the desire becomes so strong that craving to indulge becomes so strong that a time comes when it compels me to violate the value. Then we become managed by our desires. So as long as we fulfill our desires within the boundaries of the values, we say that we are managing the desires. But when the values are compromised in fulfilling desires, because the desire compels me, I just cannot get rid of it. And then it compels me, by hook or crook, buy, borrow or steal, do anything, but I want this. So when my mind does that, that is when I become helpless. As we say, you are helpless and alone, that a person violates the value, never by choice. But then, it is this craving, it is this tendency to indulge, which then results into anger, or results into greed. This is what in fact compels me to violate my value. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajo guna samudbhavaha. So very beautiful analysis of our mind and the desire is now given in this section here. Vidhyenam hi vairinam, and know this to be the enemy number one. So Lord Krishna identifies our enemy. It is said kama. Kama means desire. But at the moment, let us say that a desire which actually I cannot control, that is my enemy. As long as I can manage my desire, so long I would not say it is my enemy. In a way it is, but still it is not so unpleasant or bitter an enemy. But when desire takes hold of me, that desire which takes hold of me, that is definitely my enemy. And that enemy is further being described by Lord Krishna. We also said last time, Mahashana, Mahapapma, Mahashana, He is insatiable, Mahapapma, he is grossly wicked. This fellow is insatiable, meaning that we can never satiate our desire. That indulgence can never be satiated. More I try to satisfy this tendency to indulge, more only it will grow, and that is why it can never be satiated. And Mahapapma is grossly wicked. It is a great sinner, and it compels me to perform the sins in terms of violating my values. So as we said last time also, whenever we see any violation of values anywhere in the world, we can all trace it to this karma. Trace it to this karma of the desire, resulting into krodha, anger, or resulting into lobha. What happens is, when the desire is fulfilled, then it never comes to a stop. A desire gets fulfilled, but the desire never gets fulfilled, and the desire comes back in another form. So, it always demands more and more. So, in India these days, there is a commercial, you know. Ye dil mange more, that's what they say. You know? It is, there is this drink called Pepsi, you know, and this is how they are advertising. Just enticing the youngsters, that's all. Because you're not happy with one, you want second, third, like the, they talk about beer here, you know, and so first and second round, third, fourth. They talk about Pepsi, etc., you know. So, ye dil mange more, that's what they say. Meaning that this mind is demanding more and more and more. They must have known that, I guess, you know. And so it's not only for Pepsi, it's for anything. You try to provide it, it always wants more. It's understandable that the mind wants something is not its fault. That my mind wants things is not its fault. It is natural that it wants. Because the poor thing is feeling, as we said, inadequate, incomplete. There is a sense of void inside, and therefore it wants to fill that void. It is natural. All that Vedanta is asking us to do is to understand what causes that void. That's all. So that inner void, inner incompleteness is the cause of desire. And when I feel incomplete or inadequate with myself, there is a desire to become adequate. It is natural. So to desire is nobody's fault. It is something natural. And sense of inadequacy is the cause of all the desires, because I cannot accept an inadequate self. Unfortunately, we don't give a further thought to that, and we think that inadequacy will be eliminated or removed by fulfilling desires. This is what everybody thinks. And that's the reason why, as the desires arise in our mind, we go on fulfilling them, hoping that way my sense of inadequacy will go. And most people do not stop to think whether that happens or not. Whether by fulfilling the desires one after the other, does the sense of inadequacy, does it in any way even reduce in its intensity, or does it become more intense? So Vedanta tells us that the sense of incompleteness becomes more intense, more you try to fulfill it. It's like a bottomless pit. So that the reason why the desire is being discussed is so that we can, in fact, pay attention to this most fundamental issue in our life. Desire is the most fundamental issue. And desire arises from the sense of inadequacy or incompleteness, sense of smallness, sense of limitation, sense of dependence, sense of helplessness. And that is the most fundamental issue, what we may call the fundamental human problem. So human being has a problem, and human being alone has this problem also. Nobody else has a problem. Other creatures may have a problem in terms of desiring food, etc. Once that is done, then they're happy. A buffalo will sit from morning till evening without doing anything. You give it the food in the morning, it's okay. In the evening, some more, it won't need anything else during the day. Not so with a human being. More you give him, more he demands, the variety he demands. And so you want some, no Swamiji, may I have that in the yellow wrapper? That's the children when you distribute candy to them. No, can I have that one? No, this one. Same stuff, but still, the yellow one I want and the red one I want. And oh, I love the dark chocolate, you know. So more we give, because unfortunately these things do not have the capacity to remove that sense of inadequacy. The objects and achievements of the world do not have the capacity to remove the inadequacy of my heart, and that remains intact. And therefore, it then gets expressed in different forms of desires. So what's the nature of this desire? That this desire is my vidhyenam hivairanam, it is enemy. In what way is it an enemy? Now that is being described in the next verse. Let us read the verse 38. You have this handout with you? You see this two-page thing. One of the pages is this, you know? Page 38 in your handout. This page 200 series, that's Viveka Churaman. But this page 38 is the Bhagavad Gita. Dhumena vriyate vannihi yatha darsho malena cha yathol vena vruto garbhah tatha tene damavrutam. Tasatena idamavrutam. In that manner, this knowledge is covered by this desire. What desire does it? It covers my true nature. That's the problem. Meaning that the desire deprives me of what I am, deprives me of the benefit of what I am. Desire creates, makes my mind, drags my mind away from myself. Desire is always of a given object. I want a given thing. It may be anything. It may be a new object. It may be a new position. It may be a new place. Something or the other. So when a desire arises in my mind becomes engaged in the thoughts or deliberations of that which is the object of desire. So if it is, whether it's a desire for a new job or a new car or a new home or a new anything, when the desire arises, then my mind will naturally dwell upon that object of desire. So when the mind dwells upon the object of desire, it cannot dwell upon myself. This self and non-self that way are mutually exclusive. Therefore, when my mind dwells upon the objects of the world, at that time it cannot dwell upon the self. So that is how the desire, by making my mind dwell upon these material objects, or non-self as we call, it deprives me of dwelling upon myself and recognizing myself as I am, experiencing myself as I am, and that's how the desire in a way deprives me of the benefit of what I am. Because my mind was focused on the self, then it would see what the self is for. That it is happiness. It is, you know. So that fact I could have seen, provided the mind was dwelling upon the self. So therefore, whenever, even in the description of meditation practice also, the first thing that we are asked to do is to make our mind free of desire. Sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva sarvan asheshatah. In the sixth chapter, Lord Krishna says that, may you make your mind free from all the desires arising from this sankalpa. I want this, I want that, I want that. Calm down. Because as long as the desire is there, so long the mind will be always focused upon or centered upon the object of desire. At that time, it cannot be centered upon the self. That is the reason why the need to become free from desires, then alone it is possible for the mind to dwell upon the self. Atma samsam manah kritva nakinchita vichintayet. May your mind then focus upon the self, and then do not think of anything else. So thinking of anything else seems to be contrasted with thinking of the self. These two thinkings cannot go on simultaneously. Now that's the thing. Someday when you discover the facility to be able to think of yours, that the thinking of the self is not denied in spite of thinking of the other thing, then you are a master. That's how a wise person is. That he can think of the world without losing the thought of the self. But for an otherwise person, the thing of other thing is always at the cost of thinking of myself. Paranchikhani vyatruna svambhu tasmat parang pasyati nantaratman. Unfortunately, God has made our sense organs and mind extrovert. And therefore, the mind always looks out and never looks at itself. Always fascinated by parachah kamat anuyanti balaha. And so people have never given thought to why my mind desires. What is the cause of desire? Never give a thought to that as the mind desires. He just proceeds to fulfill the desire without questioning whether the desire is legitimate or not. Whether there is a desire behind all the desires, without giving a thought to that, he keeps on fulfilling desires as they arise. Parachah kaman anuyanti balaha. So Kathopanishad says, the people of immature mind always keep on pursuing the external objects. So that is how desire is called an enemy. That's all. Nobody is an enemy. But it's an enemy this way. It deprives me of dwelling upon myself and deprives me of the benefit of what I am. What I am is nothing but ocean of happiness. I am deprived of the treasure which I am, and all the time looking for some little drops of happiness, denying the ocean. Ocean is denied and I am begging for little drops of happiness. This is what desire does to me. This is not an ordinary thing. This is our life. And ye kech atmahano janaha, Ishavasya Upanishad says, these people who are all the time injuring themselves. Every time I reach out, every time I am wandering out in begging for happiness, I am only hurting myself because I am happiness myself. I cannot be asking for happiness from you unless I deny the happiness which I am. Therefore, in every demand for happiness or security from somewhere in the world, there is a denial of the self. There is a rejection of the self, as a matter of fact. We do not know, but that's what is happening. In that sense, Lord Krishna says that this desire is your enemy. Because if you keep on supporting it, it is at your own cost. It drops you away of all your peace and serenity. Vidhyenam hevairinam. Atmanah nashanam. Because as I keep on pursuing desires, as it becomes stronger, as I said, a time will come when what I desire is more than what I deserve. As long as what I desire is within the boundaries of what I deserve, so long it's okay. But a time comes when I desire more than what I deserve, and that is when the boundary of values are broken, are transgressed. And then ultimately it makes me cry. That's what it does. It makes me do things that are against my value and makes me get all kinds of tickets and everything, you know. That means the law of... So the hands of law ultimately, the ticket is just an example, that's all it is. That's a desire also. 65 miles an hour speed limit, 70 miles, 75 miles. It's just desire that makes me do. It's a thrill that I get out of it. It may be habit also. Sometimes it's not even a thrill. In the beginning it may be thrill, then it becomes a habit. To drive at, it's not that you are thrilled at 75, it's just ordinary thing. Then it becomes a need ultimately. What is this, 55? What is this? You're driving what? A block car or something? Swami, my father drives block car, he doesn't drive car. That's what they say. The children say that. My father drives block cart because he drives within speed limit, that's all. So what is thrill in the beginning? You get used to it, and then it becomes need. Then you cannot do without it. That's when it traps you. Then all the traffic patrolmen are there waiting for this kind of people. 3 point, 6 point, this point. The other day this person, Swami, I'm on probation, you know. So they put you on probation. That if any more offense in next 6 months, you know, you lose your license. I'm on probation, somebody said, you know, for 6 months. I must watch out. Who does all this? This desire does it. We must know that. Who lends us in trouble? Anytime we are landed in trouble, it is desire in one form or the other. Which desire? Desire that manages us, that we do not manage. That's all. As I said, let us at the moment not condemn the desire, at this time anyway. Let us say that as long as we manage the desires, that means we do not transgress the values, so long it's okay. In Pujya Swamiji's words, it's a privilege to desire, okay, because there will be no progress. Ambition is required, otherwise progress will not be there, and so on and so forth. As long as they are at the childish level, so long desires are accepted, you know. When we grow out of them, a day will come when, of course, that also will become an obstacle. So this verse explains us how the desire becomes an enemy. Dhumena vritayavanhi, as a flame or the fire is covered by smoke. Yatha adarshaha malena cha. Adarsha means a mirror. Mala means dirt. As a mirror is covered by dirt. Yatha ulbena avrutaha garmaha. Garmaha is embryo. Ulva means this amnion, whatever it is, you know. Embryo covered by amnion, or by the fetus covered by the embryo. Tatha tena idam avrutam. So is knowledge covered by this desire. By knowledge we mean here our sense of discrimination. Our good sense of discrimination. The free will that we have. So human being is gifted with a free will. He is also gifted with an intellect with which he can judge what is desirable, what is undesirable, what is right, what is wrong, what is proper, what is improper. So we have been given an intellect with which we can in fact judge this. The desire in fact weighs the very capacity to do that. That's what is meant here. How does desire become an enemy? That it covers this very capacity to discriminate, which is really the glory of a human being. What distinguishes a human being from other living beings is his capacity to discriminate from what is right and what is wrong. So it starts that way. What is right and what is wrong? Dharma and adharma. And then it ultimately stretches to atma and anatma. So that's the potential that our intellect has. The intellect has the potential to separate the two things. The grain from the chaff, it can separate. The milk from the water, it can separate. The true from the false, it can separate. It is this capacity that is called knowledge here. And this desire veils that very capacity. And then I no more remain a human being. I am a human being as long as I use my free will. I am a human being as long as my sense of discrimination is functioning, and that my free will is in fact guided by my sense of discrimination. Then I am a human being. Otherwise, there is not much difference between me and an animal. If I am acting not out of my free will, acting not out of my sense of discrimination, then I no more remain a discriminated person. And so, it is this sense of discrimination, the sense of judgment, the sense of that capacity of discerning. This is what is veiled by this karma. That is why he is called an enemy. So, why does Lord Krishna call an enemy? What's the problem with this desire? What problem Vedantins have with these desires, you know? Vedantins seem to have some problems. All the time attacking desire. What's their problem? So Lord Krishna explains that he is our enemy. How is he enemy? Because when the desire arises, our sense of discrimination is veiled. Now of course, desire can mean different intensity, and therefore our sense of discrimination can be veiled also in different degrees. It is not that all the time we lose the sense of discrimination. Sometimes we do retain the sense of discrimination and fulfill our desire. Sometimes desire arises and we are able to display the discrimination and say that, no, this is not for me. Or not now, whatever. So if the desire is not very intense, then we retain our sense of discrimination. As a desire grows in intensity, to that extent our sense of discrimination gets further and further veiled. So three intensities are described here. First is, just as the fire is covered by smoke, there is a desire which just arises. Understand that desire also is a result of thought build-up. In the second chapter, Lord Krishna described how this process of thought build-up takes place. Dhyayato vishyan pumsa sangasteshu vajayate. When my mind dwells upon a pleasurable object, then As I dwell upon that, I start a liking for that object arises. Seems to be good. It's good. I like it. Okay. Still it's not bad. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. I continue to dwell upon that object. Then that fancy of the liking slowly gets converted into desire. I think I want to have it. So first I'm just fancy thinking about it. That's the whole idea of this display in the shops. So when you're walking in your lunchtime on the sidewalk, then all these things are displayed, you know. And it sounds very innocent. But then you do it every day. Every day, lunch, you know, you have a certain way. So every day you see that. Dhyayato vishayan pumsa. So you dwell upon that. Dwell upon a new dress. I don't dwell upon whatever it is. And it looks good. Then you go inside, then let's see how will it look, you know. Then you try to see yourself in that, you know. Seems to fit, all right. Then do it for a few more days and say, I think it's nice to have it, you know. Continue with that, I think I want to have it. Continue to dwell upon that, it says, I must have it. Now we are possessed by desire. Until that point, I was still free to manage my desire. Once this desire has risen to a point that I must have it, then desire is a boss. So this is how it becomes an enemy. And then by hook or crook, then you ask whoever it is that you would ask permission of, you know, may have this. How many times, you know? And so then the conflict arises. And when a desire is thwarted, it can be fulfilled, then it gets transformed into anger. So, kama esha, krodha esha. So, it is a build-up. If you are attentive and watch your mind as to what is happening and become familiar with this process of build-up, then we have the freedom to stop it where we want. If you want to stop it, I'm not saying that every desire has to be stopped. In case you think that desire is worth stopping, then we can stop it provided we are attentive when this build-up is taking place. So first is dhumena vriyate vannahi. In the beginning, desire is only like the smoke covering the fire. You can fan it, you can get eliminated. That is, you can buy what we call the viveka. So first step is when desire arises in my mind, reminding our mind that fulfilling desire is not the way to eliminate desire, but by growing out of desire is the way to eliminate desire. And the Vedanta teaches how to call dosha darshanam, dosha dushtya muhur muhu. When the mind says, I want to have that, then of course mind always thinks of one aspect of that thing. How nice to have it. How nice would it be? I want dog. They're children like that, you know. Because they can only think of playing with the dog and running around and this. That's so wonderful. They see in the movies or on the TV, you know, in the neighbor. But dosha drishti, there is other side of it also. You have to wake up at 5 o'clock every morning, take this fellow out, you know. First of all, take him to obedience school and then train him properly. And then every morning, evening, you have to clean after him, you have to do this. Are you willing to do that? Then you can't have a dog. That's dosha drishti. Although children always say, I'll do it, and they never do it anyway. It's the parents who wind up doing it, and mostly mothers who wind up doing it. That's the reason why mothers are most objection to all the pets, because they know that they will wind up having to do everything. They still do it, mothers being what they are, they do it anyway. That's a different matter. But dosha drishti, we have to show the other side. There's always the other side. But when the mind comes under the spell of something, it loses capacity to see the other side. This is what we mean by losing the capacity of discrimination. That everything has two sides, the two sides of a coin. And therefore, when every object has certain tempting aspects about it, some attractive things about it, also you have to pay the price. There is always some cost that is always involved. Nothing ever comes free. And by cost, we do not mean cost in terms of money, in cost in other terms. And so, let the mind also see the other side. What is involved in having a dog? Who is going to take him for this? Who is going to do this? Who is going to do that? A bird. Can I have a bird? Anything, you know. Whatever, everything always takes time, I guess, you know. And so, it's nice to hear that bird. See, our bird so beautiful. And then it says Rama and says Krishna and says this and that. It's nice to say to the people. But later, you'll take care of that thing. Naturally. And so, a price has to be paid for any pleasure. That's for sure. No pleasure will come without the attending price. And if it stopped there, there is no problem. Unfortunately, a pleasure also leaves the samskara or a tendency of seeking pleasure again. So when I enjoy it once, it doesn't stop there. As I said, the transaction doesn't get over there. It leaves its impression. It leaves residual impression. Yes, it is a nice thing. It's an enjoyable thing, desirable thing. And therefore, my mind again wants it again. So we tell ourselves, look, fulfillment of desire does not come to an end merely by satisfying the desire, but then it leaves tendency to desire again. And again, an exertion involving fulfilling the desire. And again, when the object of desire goes away, when there is separation from that, also there is a lot of pain involved. So, then again, when somebody comes in the way of fulfilling desire, then there is a dvesha. When somebody helps me fulfill desire, there is raga. So desires also cause raga-dvesha, attachment and aversions, always. I know dad doesn't want mom, I know you are good, dad is like that, you know. Or dad is good, mom is like that, one of them. The parents should know that they must have an agreement among themselves. And they must have a united front, you know. Otherwise children really take good advantage of this. When the father doesn't agree, goes to mother, doesn't it? If father and mother, both of them have a proper agreement, and so if they present, as I said, a united front, then there is no problem. One of my friends had this policy. He says, what did your father say when he goes to mother? Father said no. Then mother will automatically say no. But usually, because of the difficulty that father and mother have with each other, if father says no, mother wants to say yes. Now that will be a different matter. You know? What happens is their individual problems, the children exploit that situation. Then that's besides the point. But the thing is that the desire deprives me. What happens is that object always presents the attractive side of it, and my mind fails to see the other side of it. This is what is meant by losing the sense of discrimination. In that sense, desire is an enemy. Because mind only dwells upon the advantages and advantages and advantages. Otherwise, who will invest money in these stocks and things like that? But people manage to do that, that's all. So the clever stockbroker, whoever they are, you know, they manage to hook you. But all the time making you dwell upon the benefits and benefits and benefits and benefits, you know. And nobody ever thinks that what will happen if this other way around, you know. We never think of that. And that is what is meant by losing the discriminating capacity. There is nothing wrong in thinking of the advantages, but then there are disadvantages. Are you ready? So Swamiji asked this question in one place. That before you undertake any endeavor, ask this question, am I ready for failure? Am I ready for failure? Not that I am working for failure or failure will come. Am I ready for it? If you are ready for it, then go ahead. If you are not, then think. Because it can happen and then you get devastated completely. But that capacity to think of the other aspect is called viveka. And this is what the desire veils. However, in the beginning, the intensity of desire is very little. And therefore, if we become alert, dhumena vredevanahi, like the smoke covering the fire, you can still feel the fire, heat of the fire, the smoke only covers the brilliance of the fire, and by fanning, the fire again will become evident. Similarly also, when a desire occurs in my mind, at that time, I can subject it to the scrutiny of what is the gain and what's the loss, what's the price that is involved. Am I willing to pay the price? Yes? Okay. If you don't do that, then yatha darsho malena cha, then the intensity of desire builds up to the next stage, just as the mirror is covered by the dirt. So the difference here is that when the fire is covered by the smoke, at least you can feel the fire. Even though you may not see the fire, you feel the fire, you experience the fire. When the mirror, however, is covered by dirt, you cannot even see the mirror. So that's one more level, you know, of veiling. So thus, when we allow the desire to build up and do not use our discrimination, then our sense of discrimination gets further veiled, like the mirror being covered by the dirt. Then we cannot see. Then you will have to exercise your will. Because sometimes, in spite of reasoning with the mind just does not yield, you know. Sometimes mind is what it is. Swami, you reason with the mind. Oh, this is a disadvantage, this is what it is, that is what it is. Mind says, I still want it. I want it. Like sometimes children, you know, you keep on reasoning with them. But that doesn't work. So how should we, Swamiji, deal with our children? Reason with them. No, always. Parents say we keep reasoning with them, you know. But when they decide upon something, they just don't yield. Sometimes our mind does not yield in spite of reasoning. Then what's the second step? Second step is putting my foot down. I tell my mind, I'm not going to do it. Yatha darsho malena cha, because my sense of discrimination is pretty much veiled, and unless I take some very strong step as far as the mirror is concerned, my fanning the dirt is not going to go away. I have to actually remove that dirt with a wet cloth or something like, or we have to scrape it. And similarly also, a much more effort is required to deal with my mind when the desire has been allowed to build up into the next level of intensity. And if you do not take step even then, yatholbena vrto garbha, like the fetus being enveloped by the embryo, and so you can't even see it. That is called tamas, sattva, rajas and tamas. This verse can be interpreted in different ways. One way to interpret is how it builds in intensity. And then, that is, if you allow the desire to build up to that intensity, then you become totally helpless. There is nothing you can do. But these three levels are told to us so that we can become cautious. And when we find the desire building up, then we become alert and then use our sense of discrimination and then decide whether we want to fulfill. Is it worth fulfilling or not? As we said, last time we talked about the desires, there are two kinds of desires. Desire usually is always for something that I do not have. Desire is for something that I do not have. And I have many things I do not have. But then, there is also desire for this happiness, which is desire for something that I have, but I think I do not have. Like the bunch of keys in my pocket. I think it is not there, and so I am searching for it. And so also I am searching for happiness around in the world, thinking it is not with me. In fact, it is my own nature. So therefore, when the desire arises in my mind, I ask this question, mind, what do you want? You just want a motor car for the sake of motor car? Or you want a motor car for the sake of happiness? What do you want? No, I need a car for transportation. Then have it. Then, but why do you want only a Mercedes? Why not a Honda, you know? Why not? For transportation. So when we probe into that, then we'll understand also the workings of our mind. Set, because mind can be pretty clever, as we'll see in the next verse also. And so, that is how probing all the time and inquiring, but, so that is one way of interpreting the verse is the three levels of intensity. Other way of interpreting the verse is that the first example of the fire being covered by smoke is sattvic desire. The mirror being covered by the dirt is a rajas desire. And the embryo being covered is the tamas desire. So desire can be sattvic, desire can be rajas, desire can be tamas. And so it can build up from one level to the other. So this is how we understand this mechanism of desire, so that we have a strategy of how to deal with it. So how does it says tatha tene dhamavratam? This knowledge meaning sense of discrimination is covered or obstructed by the desire. How does it do that? The next verse, verse 39, explains that.
Avritam jnanametena jnanino nitya vairina kama rupena kaunteya duspurena nalena cha.
Avrutam jnanam etena, etena kamena jnanam avrutam. By this desire, the knowledge, by jnanam you mean the sense of discrimination, is covered. Because in the earlier verse, Lord Krishna used a pronoun, tatha tena idam avrutam. Although the translation says knowledge is covered, but translation should be, thus this is covered. What is this that is covered by desire? The next verse is jnanam etena avrutam. It is a knowledge. So knowledge, as we say, the sense of discrimination, which is the capacity of the intellect to discriminate, that alone, that itself is covered or veiled by the desire.
Jnaninaha nitya vairina.
This desire is an eternal enemy of the wise. Jnani here doesn't mean wise in terms of sthita prajna. Jnani means like you and I, you know, that's a jnani. Meaning that the people who understand, that is a jnani. So discriminating people. So after listening to Vedanta for so long, we know that this is not, you know, this is my enemy, I know that. Jnani naha nitya vairina. This desire is an eternal enemy of a discriminating person or a discerning person. Why is it an enemy? Because when a desire arises in my mind, then I know that it is my enemy. And still sometimes it takes hold of me and makes me do things against my will. So then of course, therefore I knew, even as the desire arose, I knew that it is my enemy. I see my helplessness, I do not want to fulfill that desire, and it makes me do that anyway. And when the result comes, then I know I suffer. So all along I suffer. So a person who is discriminating, or a person who has this much knowledge, who has listened to Bhagavad Gita and analyzes nature of desire, what damage it does to me, when desire arises in mind of such a person who understands the nature of desire and the damage it does, then when he is compelled by the desire to fulfill the desire, then he is suffering all along. He suffers even when the desire arises, and suffers when he is controlled by the desire, and suffers from the consequences of desire, and therefore, all along, poor fellow suffering. So that is why sometimes ignorance is bliss. We do not know that desire is what it is, then it arises. That's why jnanino nitya vairina, it's an eternal or all the time enemy of this knowing person. The fellow does not know any better, when desire arises, he goes ahead and merrily fulfills it. He is happy. He recognizes only the consequence that it is desire that has landed me here, you know. But he does not know when the desire arises. This person knows even when it arises. And, as I said, he is able to control it, well and good. Cannot control it, then he suffers all along. Jnaninaha nitya vairina kama rupena kaunte duspurena analena cha. He kaunte kama rupena, by this enemy of the nature of the desire, that this sense of discrimination is covered. Duspurena analena cha. Duspura, insatiable. Anala, like fire. We already earlier described, like fire cannot be satiated by putting more and more fuel into that. More fuel you put in the fire, more demanding it becomes. Similarly also, more we try to appease this desire, more demanding it becomes. And it veils the discriminative sense of this person and makes him suffer. So according to this, all the suffering is a result of desire.
sounds unfair, you know, Swami, why? But that is what it is. All the suffering is the consequence of desire. Only because desire cannot be fulfilled. The thing is that what I desire as a result of desire never gets fulfilled. That is why. It is not that person desires only wealth or name and fame and security for their own sake. Person desires wealth or anything for his own sake. Atmanastu kamaya saram priyama hoti. Something becomes desirable to me because I am really desirable to myself. And as Pujya Swamiji would say that, through fulfillment of every desire, what I am seeking is to please the self. I have no interest in any object of desire. Nobody is interested in the house and family. Nobody has interest in any motor cars or house or any job. Nobody has any interest. Everybody is interested only in themselves. And what am I interested in? I am only interested in the pleased self. That's what I want. I hope that as a result of acquiring that object, I'll become pleased. That is what is happening. That object entices me and creates in me a notion that if I get that object, I'll become pleased. It's only when that thing comes, I experience for a while, and then it's, what shall I say, the fascination slowly, that glitter, you know, slowly wears out. When I know the true nature of that, I become then disenchanted with that, and then I go after something else. That means our life becomes a series of disenchantments, that's what it is. Until I recognize the true nature of something, so long it fascinates me. But when I have really seen it at the close quarters, I know what is all involved. The grass always seen is greener yonder, you know. That says only when you go there, then you find out. Similarly also, when I really examine any acquisition, I discover the limitations of that. I become disenchanted with that. And then again, my desire or need for the pleased self remains intact. And therefore, to fulfill that need, again, I go after some other object which promises me to bring about that pleased self. The point is that there is nothing in the world that is capable of really making me pleased. There is nothing in the world that is capable of giving me happiness. Yes, they can appease my hunger, they can protect me from heat and cold, they can do all these things. And therefore, for doing my day-to-day activities and meeting my responsibilities, I do require all the objects of the world, no question about it. But if I think that by acquiring this thing, I'll be happier than what I am, or more satisfied than what I am, or more comfortable with myself than what I am, then that is not right. Therefore we say that the desire behind, or most of the desires, is a desire for the fleeced self, and no thing in the world has capability of fulfilling desire for the pleased self. That is the reason why every desire is doomed to be only failure. If I am clear that I am hungry, therefore I want this food, then it's fine. I am feeling cold, so I want this, fine. I need a shelter, so I want a house, fine. I need a mode of transportation, so I need a car, it's fine. I need money to run my house and family, so I need, it's all fine. But what happens is, car is not merely the object of transportation, it becomes what? An object of my self-promotion, object of the gratification of ego, and so I identify with the car, and then I am as big as the car is. So if my car is more expensive than neighbor's car, then I am bigger that much. If the neighbor next day brings even more expensive car, I automatically become smaller. You see, it's amazing. I am the same. But identifying with the things, always trying to become something different from what I am. So not recognizing this process. That is why Vedanta calls desire. It is not so much desire. It is aviveka. It is lack of viveka or discrimination. That is my enemy, really. Inasmuch as a desire is usually a product of lack of discrimination, in that way karma is called, or desire is called enemy. Desire is not enemy. But the cause of desire is not discerning that what I am seeking is myself. What I am seeking cannot be attained from anywhere else. Why I do not have? Fine. It is quite fair to desire what I do not have, what I need. There are needs for sustaining our body, sustaining our life, meeting our responses. There are needs.
But this need to please the self cannot be satisfied by anything in the world, and therefore, if I want a given thing so that I'll be pleased, now that is not going to happen. So this much distinction I should make. What we call binding desires and non-binding desires. A binding desire is a desire for to please the self because nothing can fulfill that. A non-binding desire is, you're hungry, you want food, okay. You're thirsty, you want water, all right. You want a shelter, okay. So, this body is born with certain basic needs, no doubt. Not only that, but in the life also there are certain basic needs because we must take care of our family, take care of the children, we must do those things. So, they are the needs. And for fulfilling those needs, fulfilling desires is quite fair. And in fact, we should do that. Otherwise, we are irresponsible. So, the need is there and I do not do anything to fulfill that real need, that also is not right. But at the same time, if by fulfilling a desire I think that I'll be happier than what I am, then that is also not right. So that is also aviveka. It is that which can be called enemy. But that aviveka or wrong discrimination, the first manifestation is desire. Therefore, desire here is described as enemy. Understand that Vedanta does not look upon anything as enemy. Nothing can be my enemy. If something can be enemy, at the most, ignorance, which I have not created. And ignorance creates, as you said, aviveka, a projection. Seeing something which is not there. Seeing snake where there is rope. Seeing happiness where it is not. Seeing security where it is not. So it is that false seeing, which is what we call moha or aviveka, that is our enemy. That is what is meant by kama here. That alone is our enemy. And therefore, viveka, or discrimination alone is the solution of dealing with their enemy. Otherwise, dushpurena analena cha, the desire per se is insatiable, like the fire. And thus we find ourselves desiring and desiring and desiring. Incomplete, incomplete, incomplete. Dissatisfied, dissatisfied, dissatisfied. And so dissatisfied self never goes away in spite of fulfilling all the desires. That should enable and make us think. And that's what Lord Krishna wants us to do here. Okay.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Vadarayanam Sutra Bhashya Kritau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah Ishvaro Guru Ratmedi Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadhyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.